This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
All right, welcome to the conversation on the TYT Network. Donald Trump recently declared in the Rose Garden that he will use the military inside the United States of America. He also made a vague reference to the Second Amendment. It seems to incite vigilante violence from his side. We're brought on Ken Klippenstein to talk about this and some of the things that he's writing about. He's now a D.C. correspondent for The Nation magazine. Obviously, used to be with us as well. Ken, welcome back, brother.
Hey, great to be with you in these happiest of times, Cenk.
Yeah, I can't believe a global pandemic has nearly been forgotten because we're now in the middle of a worse disaster because of the systemic issues that we have and, of course, the president that we have. So you have a lot of contacts in the military. Have you heard anything from them about this, what I will call an insane plan to use the military inside the U.S.?
Yeah, so what I've been hearing is, and what I've reported recently, was that they took a lot of these plans, which were originally unclassified, and ordinarily many of them are unclassified, and they put them onto a classified server called CipherNet. And so it's not clear exactly why that is, because when they, you know, put things in classified servers, it's harder to get access and find out what's going on. It's clear that they've done this in the past, for instance, with the militarization of the border. They put those plans up on the classified server as well. But what's clear is that there is a move towards more secrecy with respect to how the military is being deployed. And what I'm hearing is that there's just a flurry of, you know, what are called fragmentary orders. Nothing's being put on paper in a very coherent, consistent way. There's a lot of confusion. But there's also the impression on the part of a lot of service members I'm talking to, at least, that they will be, that it's likely that they'll be deployed soon.
So, Ken, you know, I'd always had faith that if President Trump lost the election and he said, I'm not going, that the Joint Chiefs would walk into the Oval Office and say, Mr. Ex-President, it's time to go. We have a system of government here. You lost. It's over. You need to vacate the premises. Now, though, I'm a little concerned about that. Number one, he has replaced a lot of the military leaders with people who are more loyal to him. And two, this alarming development where he is beginning to use the military inside the United States of America 6 months before the election. So by the time we get to the election, the military might be used to serving the president and not the country. So is there any point at which the military says, no, Mr. President, we cannot and will not do that?
We're about to find out the answer to that question. I don't know. What I can tell you is that even at very high levels within the Pentagon, there is a lot of dissension. It's not public. You know, they keep it among themselves. But there is a lot of dissatisfaction, not just with what's happening now, but the administration generally. But that is the operative question, is what are the Joint Chiefs going to do if he ends up really pushing this? Because what we have here is an X factor in the protests, in the riots, and let's be real, a extraordinarily high unemployment rate being the backdrop against all this, with no answer about what to do about that. So to me, I mean, you know, people can wring their hands all they want about the, you know, riots. I have my own views on that. But so long as the unemployment rate is not dealt with, I can't imagine that they're going to be able to stop all forms of civil unrest. So that will continue, and I imagine Trump's response will continue. What the variable is here is what the military officials, and I should point out, you know, there are people of integrity within the military, so I don't think it's clear yet what will happen.
So, all right, well then, let's find out what your views are about the protests slash some turning into riots slash looting. So there are two schools of thought on the left. One is everybody be calm, be cool. Well, there's three schools. One is the establishment left saying everybody be calm. Let's just go back to normal. For God's sake, let's go back to normal. Then there is now the new left, for lack of a better way of describing it, that's saying, no, I'm not interested in normal. I'm not interested in this system. I want to break it. And the third camp, it appears to be just me, which is, it's of course not true. I think it's actually the majority of Americans, kidding aside, that says, look, we don't want to go back to normal. Normal is what got all those unarmed African-American men killed. But at the same time, we don't want looting for no reason. So what's your take on what I'm calling new left, because I have no other words for it? How real is it? How much of a part of the protest is it? And what happens next with it?
I mean, we are seeing things happen that have no precedent in living memory, certainly in my lifetime. The extent and spontaneity of these riots, you know, which I want to say, I do think pose a danger in the sense that they make it very easy for someone like President Trump to come in and say, we need military force. And not to say that, you know, I'm losing sleep over a Target store or whatever it may be. No, I'm worried about the response that will come from the president to that. And we're seeing it right now. I heard a chopper, a military chopper flying overhead as, you know, you were asking me that question. And, you know, that the kind of rioting, while I am very sympathetic to the conditions that are leading to it, I think we also need to be honest about what sort of a sort of political hand that affords the president in terms of how he's going to respond to it. But again, you have people pontificating about what to do who have no answer to this question that I just said, which is that we have an astonishingly high unemployment rate. And you don't have to be a genius to know that that's going to lead to dissatisfaction.
Yeah. So, Ken, just one more thing on that. You're now located in D.C. So how much unrest is there in D.C.?
Well, just before we were speaking, literally minutes ago, there were peaceful protesters around the White House. The President Trump gave his speech in the Rose Garden, and they actually used tear gas to disperse them, specifically just to clear out the area for his Rose Garden speech. They weren't, you know, in violation of anything. They changed. The reason I've got this sort of Ricky Dink set up behind me is because I was at my office and they actually moved up the time of the curfew. So, you know, things are very fluid. They're changing very rapidly. Demonstrators are still out. There have been, you know, acts of violence. What I've seen is overwhelmingly peaceful. And what you're seeing with this response is not just using force in instances when, you know, demonstrators are using force, but apparently just for optics purposes to clear out the area, you know, after which President Trump, I read, went to a church and he was holding up a Bible to show everyone, you know, how holy he is in doing all this.
Did he bring his porn star mistress or did he leave her behind? All right. So, look, the unrest is real, too, here in L.A. You know, yesterday was near where Mark Thompson lived. Today it's near where Anna lives. And it goes on and on and on. Right. And so people are taking advantage of the situation to sometimes cause more unrest, having nothing to do with the protesters in the community. All right. Now, you wrote recently about Trump's decision on an international issue, which is withdrawing from the World Health Organization. Are there concerns within our military about that move?
Oh, absolutely. I'm sorry. Could you repeat the question? I didn't hear the last part of it.
Yeah. So, Ken, you wrote about Trump withdrawing from the World Health Organization. Are there now concerns within the military about that move?
Oh, absolutely, because we have bases all over the world. The U.S. is unique in terms of its dispersion of military forces in every continent and every country, you know, in virtually, you know, many, many countries. And when you have conditions like that and the sort of conditions the barracks is that they live in very close quarters. You know, if you have a disease ripping through countries within Africa, I also wrote about their concerns about it ripping through Iran, it very quickly spreads to these neighboring countries where we may have soldiers, and that's going to actually affect our military readiness. And then they come back to the U.S. and, you know, spread it here. So there are very legitimate concerns about that because the World Health Organization provides aid to countries that can't themselves afford to, you know, provide the sorts of things, not just treatment, but also, you know, things like face masks and stuff like that, that can kind of ameliorate some of these problems. And what we're really seeing with a pandemic is the way in which countries are all interconnected, not just because of the shift towards this global economy that we have, but also just the nature of viruses. They spread rapidly between people. So it's really difficult to have this notion of, you know, a nation state as separate from other nation states when you have something that can pass through countries so quickly and easily like this.
Right. Those countries, if disease takes off, it affects that country, plus U.S. citizens there, plus the U.S. military there. That's very logical. But there's also a power void that it creates in international organizations. And you wrote that China seems to be stepping up to fill that void. How concerned is the military about that as well?
Oh, deeply concerned, because they're looking at it as a chessboard. Every, you know, their concern is, you know, what does U.S. influence look like? What do our adversaries' influence look like? And, you know, one of our most powerful, perhaps our most powerful adversary now is China. And so, you know, what this meeting readout that was leaked to me from what's called AFRICOM, Africa Command, shows is that they were worried about China, which is very consciously stepping in. You know, Xi gave a big speech to the UN, very clearly directed to sort of the health concerns of the countries around the world, and said to them, not just that, you know, China cares deeply about Africa, kind of underscored some of the growing economic relations that they're having with these various countries within Africa, but also, I can't remember the exact figure, but offered a huge amount of money and funding for the World Health Organization, which just prior to that, Trump had suspended. And after my report came out, Trump has said that we're going to formally withdraw from the World Health Organization. So he is absolutely creating a power vacuum. And it's not like people are just going to sit back and let that exist. Other forces will come and step in. So either we are, influencing the world health system, or China is. And that seems to be the state of affairs here.
By the way, it was $2 billion over 10 years. I know, because I just read your story. Okay, Ken Klopenstein, now D.C. Correspondent for The Nation magazine. Great stories as always. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Great to be with you, Jack.
All right, welcome back to the conversation on the TYT Network. We've got a great guest for you guys now. Judah Friedlander joins me. He's obviously world champ. He has starred in Meet the Parents, 30 Rock, The Wrestler, Star Wars, you name it. He's been on it. Stand-up comedian and also excellent progressive. By the way, one more thing I should tell you. He's got a great Netflix special that I actually watched with my son until he started cursing a little too much. America is the Greatest Country in the United States. I loved it. I thought it was hilarious. Actually, Judah, you didn't even, I don't think you cursed for like the first 20 minutes, which was amazing for a stand-up comic these days. But anyway, Judah, just before we get started with everything else, and I know you actually did a fundraiser for Just Democrat and stuff, are you still world champ?
Still the world champ, which means I'm a champion of the world, and I'm a champion of the world's rights and all the inhabitants of the world. That's who I fight for.
So does your heart hurt as the champion of the world these days for what the world is going through with coronavirus and now the unrest in America and Donald Trump, and just a little while ago, Trump declaring that the military will not act within the United States, and all the things that are happening?
You know, I actually just tweeted this a few days ago. I tweeted, the USA's foreign policy and domestic policy are identical. And, you know, that's always been one of our problems. We're imperialists, foreign and domestic. And, you know, I actually thought martial law was going to happen a little while ago. But here we are, possibly on the brink of it. So, yeah, pretty crazy. I just, you know, wish everybody to keep fighting smart, new ways to fight, and stay safe.
Yeah. Well, you've been a leading voice for America being number one within the United States. So now that we lead the world in coronavirus cases and deaths, do you feel like you are prescient on that count?
I think so. You know, I think, I think it was several years ago I was doing stand-up bits about how we're number one on things, and it seems like that's kind of become sort of a lot of people talking about that these days, unfortunately. But that's the way it is. But say what you want about our country, we're exciting, never dull. This is an exciting country. Lots of human rights violations, but exciting.
Yeah, and by the way, to your point about domestic and foreign policy being the same, that's why I always thought, like, people who thought it was inconceivable that some parts of the CIA might have been involved in killing JFK, like, wait, let me get this right. The guys who regularly killed progressive leaders of other countries throughout the world somehow would have had some moral barrier to our progressive leader being taken out when that leader is way more important than any of the other leaders in the world for their power grab. Like, maybe it happened, maybe it didn't, but the idea that they would find that unconscionable, I thought to be absurd.
Yeah, well, I mean, another joke I did years ago was, you know, people always talking about this is the general theme of the joke. People always talking about, oh, gun control. We got to fix gun control inside this country. It's like, what about our gun control outside the country? You know, we do more. We're responsible for more guns on the planet outside our country than probably any other country by a long shot.
Yeah. In fact, when defending the decapitation dismemberment of Jamal Khashoggi by the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, Trump said, yeah, but we sell a lot of guns to them. Oh, I didn't know it was that serious. Okay, so I see how that justifies his violence. Judah, you recently participated in actually two fundraisers for Jamal Bowman, who's an awesome Just Democrat, progressive running in New York. How'd that come about?
So I was, I do stand-up shows pretty much every night. Right now, actually, I'm only doing them, not every night, but still pretty often. I'm doing online stream shows. But one of the comedy clubs that I play fairly often in New York City, it's in Brooklyn, actually right near the Barclays Center, where a lot of the protests have been initially starting. So the owner of this comedy club actually grew up with Jamal Bowman. They went to school together. And so he was having a fundraiser one night for him. And he asked me, hey, do you want to be on this fundraiser? And, you know, I'm someone who I don't generally endorse politicians. I endorse ideas and ideologies and philosophies. And I don't like telling people what to do. But I researched Jamal Bowman, and I thought he had a lot of good things on his platform. And the seat he's going for is, it seems like there's a lot of things very similar with what happened when AOC was running, where she was, you know, she ran against someone who had been there for so long. And that's a similar situation here. So I did that show. That was before the lockdown. And then just about a week ago, Eastville Comedy Club did another fundraiser for him. That was a live streamed comedy show. And I did that one also. And I think he's really been doing a lot of good stuff recently, and platform wise, and, you know, the videos and that he's been putting out on social media, I think are very strong. So, yeah. You know, it's an important election. So I wish him well.
Yeah. So let me double down on two things you just said. One, Elliot Engel is a guy, until Jamal started running in that primary, was a Democrat who was generally hawkish and talked about how we need to do something about Iran. That is not good talk. And so that's a lot of the Democratic establishment co-signed onto our military aggression across the country. So it's about time they get cleaned out with actual progressives who don't want guns inside or outside of the country. And then secondly, if you're not following Jamal on Twitter, you should, because he's really putting out some amazing stories about his experience as a black man in America and in New York. And some of them have been gut-wrenching. I've shared some here, like when he was going to pick up his kids and they arrest him, make him sit on a urine-soaked floor, and never charge him with anything. Just arrested him because he was black. He runs a school in New York. Didn't bother asking. There was no charge. It's amazing. It's amazing what happens. So, I mean, you can really follow really almost any black man in America and find similar stories. But Jamal has a powerful way of communicating that. So check out Jamal Bowman. So Judah, now that you told me it's near the protests in Brooklyn, where you do your act and your stand-up comedy, Is there some chance that the protests are centered around you, since you're the world champ, and they might want to get your attention, in these?
Oh, that's a good point. I mean, you know, normally, you know, I'm out there protesting and hitting the streets, and I'm wary of doing that because of the pandemic. I'm not quite ready to be getting so close to other people. Otherwise I would be there, you know.
I had the same exact issue. You know, I got kids here, I got my wife, I see my parents. We're in a way that's outside and distant, but so I'm worried about going to protest in the middle of coronavirus, let alone everything else, right? Yeah. And so, man, we have gotten just shellacked here. Coronavirus, civil unrest, 40 people unemployed.
You know, I think that that's what makes it even more important to support these protesters, because what they're doing is so important. And the fact that they're doing it during a pandemic is pretty unbelievable, and it's heroic. And I wish them all well. And I have a friend, he's a comic. He was arrested in Brooklyn the other day, and he wasn't doing anything that where he should have been arrested, but they arrested him. And he lost his bike, he lost his phone, and when they throw him in the paddy wagon, there's no social distancing. You know, they don't even have the opportunity to do social distancing. He said none of the cops were wearing masks. And, I read another report from a journalist who was arrested in New York. And he said that, you know, the cops take off their masks, won't give them back. So it's, you know, such a, you know, in addition to the human rights violations they do so often, they're doing them in new ways during the pandemic.
Yeah, Judah, you know, you're in New York, and there's been a lot of protests in New York.
I'm in Maryland right now, but I'm in New York normally a lot and tour around the world too, but right now I'm in Maryland.
Okay, gotcha. So then let me ask you this. I've been pretty frustrated by the media coverage of the protests, and you often have a point of view on that. So what's your take on how the media has handled this so far?
Well, you know, I've talked to some friends who've been on the streets protesting. I haven't been there myself. So when you go there yourself, it's very easy to critique the media because you're there, you're seeing it. And then as opposed to seeing it at home, you know, but you know, I know someone yesterday, a comic on Instagram, that they were in Los Angeles. And they were at the protest. They said everything was peaceful, yet the cops were a block away launching stuff at them. And then they said a block behind the cops, before they got to the protest, people were looting nonstop and the cops were nowhere to be seen. So, you know, I haven't watched all the news, but I haven't seen that story being said on the news, you know. And
yeah. No, it's interesting. Yeah, Judah, I'm seeing, too, that while they're going after protesters, sometimes they've been weirdly, like, hands-off about looters, which makes no sense. Should be the exact opposite.
It does make sense if their goal is to make, you know, if the government's goal is to make the protesters look like they're all bad, or there's enough bad people there causing violence, then they'll be like, well, this isn't a cause worth fighting for. We got to get rid of the protesters. And then, you know, you can put in the cops and the military and have martial law. So maybe this is the administration's plan, you know, is to, you know, mess up the protests so that they're ensuring that they become violent. Because that's what they want. Then they can give the false justification to shut them down, and to shut down, you know, First Amendment rights. And I mean, there's been so many, TV broadcasters and journalists who look like they've been shot at with rubber bullets or pepper spray. And you know, and arrested. I mean, you had the broadcaster on CNN who was arrested and his crew right in front of them. And it was so obvious they were journalists, yet they were still being arrested.
Yeah, that's exactly right. All right, Judah, last thing. Where can people check out your stream? And do you have anything that's also coming out soon?
Well, I probably have over 2 hours of new material since my last stand-up movie came out. And I have a bunch of stuff filmed from the past year, so I'm going to be self-releasing that soon, and as well as putting out another album. And I'm doing stand-up shows on Zoom for the most part, sometimes on my Instagram, for usually about 5 or 6 times a week. And that's all random. So people can check me out on mostly Instagram, Twitter, and it's Judah World Champ, J-U-D-A-H, World Champ.
All right, Judah Friedlander, thanks for joining us on the Young Turks as usual, brother.
Yep, stay safe.
You too.